This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We are live at Edgar's Cantina here at T-Mobile Park on a beautiful day. It's Wyman and Bob. Lefko in for Wyman. Mariners getting set to take on the Pittsburgh Pirates. Game one of a three-game series. Mariners coming off a four-game sweep of the Oakland A's, and their pitching has been phenomenal. We get a chance to speak to a man who knows a thing or two about pitching. You know him. You love him. You see him on Root Sports. Our buddy Bill Krueger. The one and only. How are you, my friend?
I'm good.
Okay.
I pushed the button.
You're a pro.
I was watching to see what you were going to do because I haven't used this one before. But great to be on with you guys.
Good to talk to you.
Beautiful day.
You heard it during the update. Eight consecutive quality starts for George Kirby. The Mariners lead all of Major League Baseball with 28 quality starts. This rotation has been, everybody's had a hiccup here or there, but by and large, their rotation and the bullpen has been phenomenal.
Yeah, it's carried them. And to think that you could take the kind of hit that they took with Robbie Ray going out for the year. This is a guy that gave them, you know, as much as maybe we nitpick on Robbie Ray, he had a pretty good year last year. He struck out a couple hundred guys. He pitched a lot of quality baseball. He struggled a little bit at the end, but he gave you a lot. And that's a big hole to fill. And then to see what Bryce Miller's done, come up and pitch this is better than anybody in baseball right now. And you take the other two young kids and you pair them up with Luis Castillo, who's our number one starter. But we got a lot of number one starters the way they're pitching right now. And Marco pitched very well his last turn. Marco's had two hangnails. One of them really wasn't his fault. The eighth spot he gave up in Toronto, that was some defensive.
Yeah, I think five.
Haggerty's first time at first base. And, you know, it's like that's what happens. The baseball gods go, don't do that. But he was much better his last time. He was the fastest first baseman in baseball. I mean, gosh, you could play him as a rover. You can't play him as a rover. But nonetheless, the pitching has been phenomenal, and we're not even talking about the bullpen and doing what they're doing in the bullpen without Munoz.
And without Penn Murphy.
You're right.
Bill, last night, Logan has that up and down first inning again. We saw him do it on Saturday and then last night. But then he locks in. I mean, what goes through a pitcher's mind after you get through that tough inning and then he's able to settle down like that?
Well, he's so steady, and he has a lot of confidence, and he's got a great arm, and he's constantly trying to make himself better. He's a real student of the game. He's a real technician. That's what I would call him. And he's made some nice improvements each and every season. And this year, the big improvement is the split finger, which has really come out and played well for him in his last two turns. He's struck out six against Atlanta with it, and he struck out three last night with it. And we could get deeply into that, but to answer your question, if you're going to hit the starter, normally the great starter, and I consider him a great starter, you got to hit him early. And that was just a lead curveball that Seth Brown hit. I mean, it wasn't like he made a terrible pitch. He was just trying to land the curveball. You know, here it is. You're a fastball hitter. I'm just going to land the curveball. And, you know, he was able to get some backspin on and hit out of the ballpark. And then he was taking names after that with the combination of the big fastball and the split.
Yeah, I mean, he retired 15 in a row after the home run, 22 of 23. And everybody goes, that's the A's. It's the A's. You know better than anybody. I mean, yeah, I'm not trying to say the A's are a great team.
Well, that's a really bad team.
But he's still executing his pitches.
I think he's done this against the rest of the league for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So none of this. The way he threw the baseball last night, he did what he did against Atlanta and other teams that he's faced in this league, to me, it just speaks to his consistency. And when he's pitching at the top of his game and getting ahead and now having something besides the big fastball to get you out with, that's going to cause a lot of rethinking when you get in the box with Logan Gilbert, that's for sure.
Now, what about Kirby? I'm just fascinated by his command, and that goes to him being a rookie last year. He had 25 starts last year, Bill. He had 22 total walks all season. And you thought, wow, is that just, you know, league didn't know him. Now they know him. Could it be a different season now? It's not. I mean, he just doesn't walk. His command, even he got in a little trouble in his last start, figured it out. 8 consecutive quality starts. I'm really blown away by what he does and how consistently he does it.
He's a remarkable pitcher for his age to be have that kind of combination of power and control. It's pretty almost, well, we're going to look at it almost historically. And most of the guys you pull up when you look at those walk numbers, they're most of those guys are finesse guys.
Yeah.
That have to throw a strike. They have to not walk people or they're done. This guy's got weaponry. He can strike a lot of people out. I think it's a couple things. He has great rhythm. He has a great timing to his delivery. He's got just a remarkable hand-eye coordination. And he has a fearless attitude that people can't hit him. And what he did last year was basically say, I'm taking out a big piece of the strike zone with my stuff and you can't hit me. And balls get in play. And then he made an adjustment. He said, oh, how about this grip? Let's try the two-seamer. Kabong, the ball's coming off the off the plane of the bat, and now nobody slugs. So he doesn't walk, and you look at our game today. If you stop the team from slugging and walking, it's crickets, right? Yeah. Because nobody can string hits together. So, and now this year, he's taking another step. He's pitching on one side of the plate. He's pitching on the other side of the plate. He's going upstairs. He's sitting down and away. He's sitting down and in. He's mixing it up. He's swinging this two-seamer against left-handers. It's like he's, you know, it's Mozart-like. He's an artist.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Logan's the expert mechanic at the Indy 500. He's the mechanic. This guy's more like, you know, it's artistic. It's Van Gogh. It's Mozart.
Yeah, it's flowing.
That's more what Kirby represents to me, and that's pretty remarkable. I try to think of a young pitcher that I've seen in my day that was a lot like him, and it's Brett Saberhagen. They're not the same guy, different kind of pitcher, but the same thing: easy rhythm, big stuff, lots of strikes. Different era, different strike zone. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the high strike zone era. So if you've got the high strike with the big fastball, you are at a big advantage, because going back a couple of decades, when Saberhagen pitched or when I pitched, the strike zone was much lower and wider. It was an in-and-out game. Now it is an up-and-down game. So if you've got the up, you're at a decided advantage this game. Plus, people are being told, hey, look, we don't want you to, you know, inside out the ball the other way. We want you to swing and hit the ball of the ballpark, because if we slug, we're better. And so that means that pitch, you get more people that are trying to hit the ball in the ballpark, you get more guys you can beat up there.
Yeah.
Is that why Bryce Miller has been so effective? Because of that fastball that just stays up and doesn't drop like players expect it to?
Yeah, I mean, a lot is being said of that. He's got a lot of spin and more than the average, because he's purely behind it, and he really has great wrist dexterity and great finger strength to be able to make that ball do that, and he's dead over the top. Not dead, but pretty close. And so that's... it's a pure fastball. He's not getting on one side of it or the other. That's why he has such great spin. But he's doing this because of a couple other things. He's got the same kind of thing that Kirby's done. He's kind of a virtuoso. You know, very smooth, very repeatable. High, big front side. Like Felix Hernandez. The big front side is when you see that glove come up and then he pulls it down. That's keeping you from getting a good look at the baseball. So the big front side's part of it too. And when he wants to, he can pitch down. When he wants to, he can work, backwards. So he could do a lot. It's not just I'm living up here, because if that was the case, he'd eventually walk a couple guys and somebody would get him, because he can pitch. He can do more than just spin the ball at the top of the strike zone. That's just because of the era. He's at the most. He can advantage that more than anybody else.
Give me your thoughts on the sweeper, which is the new phenomenon out there. Is that the slider? Is it they've always talked about, you know, these offenses or coverages in the NFL that get new names. He's like, that's just cover two, but they're calling it this or this.
Right.
That's just this. They're just renaming it. Is the sweeper something completely new that didn't exist when you were pitching? Or are we just sort of retitling a slider? Or give me the difference.
I think it's a slurve, but it has a lot to do with arm angle. And I think you have to be see the game of pitching. There's a reason why we have tall pitchers. And there's a reason why starters are overhand pitchers, not sidearm pitchers. The sweeper is an element that works great for guys that are deceptive. They come in, they're in for two hitters or three hitters. They have maybe a little slightly lower angle. And they're working from a release point that's making it difficult for you to pick the ball up.
Mm-hmm.
Because the sweeper is a breaking ball that's going east-west. The bat goes on that plane.
Yeah.
You want the ball to go down against the bat. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because that's going to make it harder to hit. So the sweeper, for the most part, is kind of a deceptive pitch, a Paul Sewald pitch, a Penn Murphy pitch, a Jeff Nelson pitch. But I don't think for a guy that's got a big arm or a starter, it makes any sense whatsoever, unless you really use it carefully and keep it off the middle of the plate, because it looks great like a video game, but that ball stays on the plane longer. And if you make a little bit of an error with it, guys are going to rip it. Okay. So, case in point, Matt Brash.
Yeah.
Case in point. For me, he's got 99. He needs to tighten that up. He's got to get his delivery tightened up. When he starts his delivery, he's moving his head. There's just a lot of moving parts. He needs to really work harder at commanding his fastball. And for me, I would take that big slider, whatever you want to call it, and get it tighter.
Yeah.
And make it go down more and keep it in the strike zone and down. That would be better for him, in my opinion, than to try to make something that looks great on television. And yes, you've got some right-hand hitters at bail, but you know, he's given up a lot of hits, hasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. So is it-
so I'm just saying that's an example of somebody that probably doesn't need to throw the sweeper, in my opinion, but a Penn Murphy or Jeff Nelson or a Paul Sewald or guys that come out of the pen, you only get one look at them and boom, they're gone. That makes sense.
But that's a pitch that's already existed. It's just a new
name.
Right.
It's just a name.
Yeah.
It's a
name. So it's not a new grip. It's not, hey,
no.
Somebody created this new
pitch. I didn't
mean
to answer your question. It's fun to have a new name, and it is different than a slider, and it's different than a curve. And that's just, it's a fun way to call it a slurve.
But Jeff Nelson was throwing that back in the
day. That was what Jeff Nelson threw, yeah. And he was a one-inning, tough angle. Threw way over on the right-hand side, 6'8", coming from the side.
Yeah.
You know, Sewald with more juice, kind of. Yeah.
When you look at these pitchers that the Mariners have, and don't want to jump too far into a comparison of, okay, how good can these three young aces be in Logan Gilbert and George Kirby and Bryce Miller, but they seem nearly identical in terms of how they push each other. And Scott Servais even kind of said, hey, he sees some similarities in the competition level of what that 90s Braves staff was. What's the ideal situation for what these three can develop into and kind of anchor the staff over the next few seasons?
Well, I think the sky's the limit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they're talented in each way. They have all the equipment. They throw a ton of strikes, and I haven't. You know, we've talked about Miller's control, which is outstanding. It's very early for Miller, but everything that I see tells me this is not an anomaly. It's not going to be a flash in the pan, and then suddenly he's going to get killed, and we're going to see him back in the minor leagues. He's here to stay, just like Kirby. And he will find ways to get better as he goes along. Gilbert is just remarkable. Mm-hmm. A guy with this kind of big, long, down-the-mound release point with a big fastball and kind of like, you know, American Legion kind of breaking stuff when he got here. It was just lollipop curve with this little slider that kind of swooped across. And to see him make the improvements that he's made over time, it's remarkable how much he's able to prove at the big league level. And now with the split finger, which is going to give him something that goes down, and it's going to give him an out pitch so he can pitch up and down. I think these guys, yeah, I mean, the Atlanta Braves, a great, great compliment. Got a long ways to go. Those guys did it for an awfully long time, right? But I think it'll be interesting to see, because you know, most clubs, the hitting component and the position player component is the hub of the team. But you know what? In Atlanta, the pitchers, the starting pitchers, were the hub of the team, which is different, right? But these guys are special and exciting, and they're here to stay. You just got to hope they stay healthy. But when you got a really good delivery, like especially like with Miller and Kirby, they've got smooth mechanics. There's really good reason that they're going to stay healthy if they do the work between starts and take care of themselves. And we got so much advice and things to do to make yourself stay healthy and get better. And then Gilbert is just, he's the hardest working guy.
Yep.
And so he'll overcome whatever those deficiencies are because he just works so doggone hard.
Where are you at with I've sort of appointed myself as the Marco defender. Marco has been a tremendous leader for this team. Mariners won that trade with Tyler O'Neill, and it's not close.
Mm-hmm.
He's now your fifth starter.
Yep. Pretty good luxury.
You look at his game log, he gives you an opportunity to win almost every time out. You talked about the two hangnails, as you called them. Yeah, they were awful. It wasn't good. I'm not trying to excuse any of it. But you look at his quality. He's typically a guy who'll give up 2-3. He'll give you 6 innings, give you 5 2/3. He's your fifth starter who's more often than not keeping you in the game, giving you a chance to win. Yet, because he doesn't throw 95, because he's not one of these young electric arm guys, he's a location command guy. I feel like when he has a bad night, he takes a beating that the other guys don't. I feel like it's a little unfair to him. Again, the expectations for the fifth starter to just go out there and mow everybody down, it's not his game.
The contrarian left-hander has existed in baseball forever, and they've been great. And we could make a nice list of them. We have one here that's a Hall of Famer in Jamie Moyer.
Yeah.
Marco, to me, has pitched great this year. He had the game in Boston, which was a really difficult. After Kirby pitched as brilliant as you possibly can in that ballpark, that was one of the best performances that I've seen from a young pitcher at Fenway Park. And they were really swinging the bat. And then they got 21 runs off of us after that. And the left-handers were peppering the wall. It's a different game, you know, and he didn't do well. He didn't have a good game. But the game in Toronto, his defense let him down. I mean, he's got it. He can't have four outs in an inning. That's just not going to work. But for me, he's tough and gritty, and he knows how to get people out. And it's nice to have someone different. You don't want five right-handed pitchers that are huffing and puffing and blowing your house down. You need somebody a little bit different in there. And I think he's all of that for me. He competes. He knows how to pitch. I mean, I think in today's game, I think there's a lot of times that Marco's a guy that you could stick with a little bit longer. But we have a game built around bullpen baseball. So I think his record last year was affected by the fact that he came out of games and things went the wrong way for him. That's why he had a losing record with a pretty good ERA, an ERA in the high threes, but yet he had a 10-15 record. So I'm a big fan. He'll always work. He's improved his breaking ball. He improved it. He made it harder. And then all of a sudden it got a little bit sideways. It got a little sweepy for me because you know how I feel about that. And then last game, he made it harder, but he got his fingers on top of the ball and he got more down on it. And it was much better. For me, I mean, I'm not... 10 cents of ice, it doesn't really matter. I mean, if I were him, I think it would be wonderful for him if he could connect with Jamie. They're not the same pitcher, but Jamie could give him some things that maybe he could start to think about and deploy. When I look at Jamie, he didn't have near as good an arm as this guy. He didn't have as good a breaking ball, but he had a lot of savvy, but he could make the ball move more. I think it would be worth him to figure out, how do I get the ball to sink more? How do I get my changeup to sink more? I mean, his changeup actually is turning over more this year. Those are little things.
Yeah.
And they don't worry, you know, some old guy that pitched up 10 years ago that's not nearly as good as me, why would I listen to him? But I'm a big fan, and I think he's a super competitor. And, you know, in his head, he's still the same guy he was before these young kids hit. I still should be the 1-2 guy on this team. That's how he feels, and that's good.
Hey, Bill, we heard Marco on Tuesday, and then Logan last night mentioned Tom Murphy. They specifically called him out and said how helpful he was behind the plate for them. What did the best catchers do for you? What did you like out of a catcher when you were out there?
I think there's a rhythm. In today's game, rhythm's important because pitch calm, get the pitch, go. You don't have a lot of time for consternation, right? You don't have time to think through it or go back and forth. You got to get the sign, you got to go. So there is an importance on being on the same page, right? And today's game, I don't know how pitchers think. Do they lean on the catcher wholly, or do they really kind of feel like they're owning it, but there's a rhythm between the pitcher and the catcher, so they're on the same page? That's how it was for me. You have the guy that's thinking well and ahead with you, right? Because I wasn't going, okay, tell me what to throw. I was never doing that. I already knew what I was going to throw, and I was already thinking probably a couple pitches ahead. These guys, I don't know how they think about catchers, and they may lean on them more than we used to. But I think it's very complimentary. I find Tom Murphy to be a guy that's very gregarious, very connected, very much understands that role of really being deeply involved in the pitch-catch game. And those guys are hard to find. We have a lot of guys, you know, when I threw baseball that could catch, but they were more like interested in what their hitting was doing that day. And sometimes they didn't catch too well. All right. So, and they could probably tell me something about, you know, one more bounce curveball. And I'm not going to go back to the screen. I remember, I think I sent BJ Surhoff to left field because he just got so tired of my breaking ball with two strikes. And it probably was, they probably could have told me, BJ's quitting catching because of you.
He can't take anymore.
He can't take any more of that curveball.
Hey, we saw something yesterday or talked about something yesterday. I'm curious to get your take on it. Who was the guy who threw a pitch 104.6 miles per hour?
The Twins.
Durant from the Twins. I don't know, back when you were pitching, if you ever imagined somebody. I mean, that's a rarity, triple digits. These days, triple digits are becoming very common. You got guys on this team that can do it. I mean, 10 years from now, or is somebody going to hit 110? I think
I'll say this. I think there are more good arms. There's more focus on velocity. There's more training and understanding the levers of how to make yourself throw harder than we used to have. We were more focused on pitching and trying to hit spots and understanding the pitch catch game and how to get guys out. Not that they don't, but I would say this. I think that it's a little grassy knoll for me. I think there's a lot of good arms. I think the gun is kind of waltzed along at the same musical pace that marketing has. And, you know, what was 92 is 94, what was 94 is 96.
You think 90, the gun's a little hot?
I do. We had the old Ray gun back when I first came in the league. And I got hurt my rookie year. I blew out my elbow. So halfway through the season, I was in the days of those days. I was back behind home plate helping with the gun.
Yeah.
And we'd have a handful of guys that threw 95 plus, and Gossage threw 95 plus right around there. And that's like nothing today, right?
Yeah.
Well, you're going to tell me that what I was watching, that in one generation, guys are reversing that? I don't believe it.
So you think it's a hot
gun? I think it's a little bit of there's a little bit of whatever it is, whether the gun is calibrated up or it's just the new normal. I'm not saying there aren't good arms. I'm just saying that I think that there were a lot of good arms then that threw just as hard. And I'm going to tell you right now that Nolan Ryan threw that hard.
As hard as anybody.
He did it for 20 years, and he threw it 140 times a game.
Yeah.
So he's from another planet.
Yeah.
So we'll see the next guy. And I don't know if we'll ever see another guy like that, because we're not asking kids to do that anymore. We went from pitching on 3 days rest to pitching on 4 days rest to pitching on 5 days rest. And we're controlling it. And there's some smartness there, because you want the kids to last.
Yeah.
It's just sort of gamble. It's sort of like, but we don't want Secretariat to become Beetlebum. We want Secretariat to run.
Yeah.
So I'm always going to be the guy that says, hey, Logan Gilbert, finish it.
Yeah.
77 pitches, okay? Let him go. He's rolling him down. He's huffing and puffing. Let him finish. You know, it's not unreasonable, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also realize what happens to guys when they get abused.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be careful. I mean, not that you want to hear my whole story, but I threw 190 innings in Double A, and I was just in my second full year of pitching. I went and pitched 70 innings of winter ball. And somebody got hurt right out of spring training. I went from Double A to the big leagues. I had over 100 innings by June. I went 10 innings, 9 innings, 9 innings in a row. So I've got 275 innings by June in less than a year, and my elbow blew out. So that's stupid, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't handled correctly. Not that I was the unbelievable phenom or anything, but yeah, I think abusing guys. Fernando Valenzuela got abused by Tommy Lasorda. They throw 150 pitches a game. He was not, should have been a guy that lasted like Moyer.
Yeah.
So I think there's some smartness in making sure these guys last, and there's some real advantage to changing arm slots, and that's part of the game now. So,
Bill, we love you, man. We love you. Thanks so much for coming by. We appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, man. Thanks. Thanks, you guys. Thanks, Mike.
Here you go. Our buddy Bill Krueger from Root Sports. Really good stuff there. Getting deep into pitching. I love that stuff. We always appreciate that. Coming up, we got some news from the NFL this week that made us wonder when this one big event might come to Seattle. We'll talk about that next. It's Wyman and Bob live from Edgar's Cantina here, Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We are live at Edgar's Cantina here at T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob. Lefko in for Wyman, Seattle Sports on 710. Our thanks to Bill Krueger, who joined us in the previous segment. In case you guys missed that conversation, that will be available on the podcast page for you after the show at SeattleSports.com. And don't forget, we've got Mean Text coming up today, so you can text in whatever you got. Just be creative. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. How they doing there? Are you going to have to start calling them dumb?
Yeah, maybe. No, we have some good ones. I think, you know, I'm confident in them this week.
You don't feel the need to insult them in order to
not yet
inspire them to
not
send
yet.
Me things.
There are some good ones, some creative ones so far. Okay. We could always use more. You know what? We could always use more, because the best thing about Mean Text, we can save them.
Yeah.
Save them for the next week and the next week.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm looking to you to be the gauge. You, typically, if Lefko comes on here and starts calling our listeners dumb, that means we haven't gotten a lot of mean text. So he's trying to antagonize you into sending me.
Well, and Wyman's not here.
Yeah. So. Usually you guys team up on that.
He just likes to do that. I do it with a purpose. Like, if we need some more, I'll send it out there. Wyman just every week goes in believing they're all dumb.
Yeah. Or stoned. Yeah, they're all stoned on the weed, as he likes to say. So, again, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company.
I kind of wonder if our next guest coming up at 4, Ryan Roland Smith, if he'll get some mean texts. He hosted 2 days this week. He's fair game.
Yeah, I guess he is. He's fair game.
We're going to tell him that.
He's a great sport. So.
Yes.
Ryan is a great sport. He takes it. Yeah, listen, in this business, and we ask for it. We tell you to say mean things to us, so we got to be able to take it. He's got a very good sense of humor, Ryan. He doesn't take anything too seriously. So he'll be with us at 4 o'clock. Joe Block, the Pirates radio broadcaster. Is he either play-by-play man or caller?
Yes, radio play-by-play.
Play-by-play man. Joe Block will join us at 4:45. Bryce Miller will join us here in person at Edgar's Cantina at 5 o'clock for our player spotlight. And then Luke Arkins, our buddy from Prospect Insider, does a really good job getting into the minutia, getting deep into the stats. So he's going to join us at 5:30. So stay tuned. Lots to do, lots to cover between now and then. But a little NFL talk. The NFL announced this week that the 2025 draft is going to Green Bay, which we were talking about going, all right, well, the whole population, I had it in the story, it was like 170,000 people.
106, yeah.
100,
yeah. Low 100,000s, right?
Yeah, 100,000. And then I've never been there, so I'm just relying on others that have been there. And every one of them said, where the hell is everybody going to stay?
Well,
apparently there's nothing around. There's not a big booming metropolis, you know, that's 2 miles away or something. So this is going to be interesting to see how they make it work. But was it Paul Moyer said, yeah, whatever. The NFL does it. It just works.
Well,
they find a way.
Yeah, I am curious. So this is the one I'm most curious about. And, I mean, we bring this up for a reason, because if the draft is going to go to Green Bay, then certainly it should go to Seattle at some point. So you wonder, okay, when? And shouldn't they be in the rotation soon? Yeah, Green Bay, I'm more fascinated to see how they pulled off, because yes, the NFL can put their marketing half behind it. The NFL itself might build a hotel just for that weekend and say, there you go. We're going to take profit off that. But there are no major metropolises around Green Bay. I mean, you got a couple hours to Madison, you got 2 hours to Milwaukee, but you're going to want people in and around there. The kind of throwback that you see during games is there are houses across the street. Like, the stadium's just plopped down in the middle of a neighborhood, and it's Indy 500 style, which is coming up this weekend. Big sporting event in Indianapolis, but cars just park in driveways.
Yeah.
Like, they pull into a neighbor's lawn, there's these handwritten signs, parking, $40, are just scrawled out there, and then people are sitting on their porches saying, all right, thanks, here, have some lemonade, go into the game.
Yeah.
It doesn't kind of mesh with the slick mega environment that we saw even in Kansas City the NFL put on for the draft.
Well, they had over 300 through the weekend combined, over 300,000 people out there, so I'm just wondering how they're going to deal with it. But I'm sure they took all of that into consideration and have it figured out. Maybe all those people that had parking lots in their front yard will now rent out the rooms in their home to people as a hotel. I don't know. But the other one is the Super Bowl. It's going back to Levi's Stadium.
Yeah.
In 2026. So the Super Bowl in 2024 is in Vegas. In 2025, it's in New Orleans. In 26, it'll be at Levi's Stadium. When does Seattle get in the mix? Because the idea of, hey, we got to only go to good weather cities went out the window when Seattle won the Super Bowl in New York that year, and it was Arctic. It was freezing. We were out there for the whole week prior to that, and it was beyond cold out there. So it wasn't San Diego. It wasn't tropical. It wasn't warm. It was beyond freezing. So obviously that's not a huge concern for the NFL. If it can be pulled off, why wouldn't Seattle be a consideration?
Well, I think it is now, right? Because that's, that's the last kind of northern city that they've been to, because they went to the one in Indianapolis that was inside and everyone kind of hated because of the weather.
Yeah, they were in Detroit, which was inside.
But now it's just been, I mean, it goes the same four or five spots, and there's a reason now why new stadiums are being built with roofs, or, you know, with a way to close the roof so they can host inside. And Atlanta has one, and even Minneapolis got one because they have this brand new fancy stadium. So here would be my answer for Seattle and the Super Bowl: never, until they do something to the stadium. I think the NFL draft, we have a much better option, and I feel like because they're going to Detroit and they're going to Green Bay, the draft's going to come here soon, which will be fun. The problem is the NFL now wants a roof. They want to make sure the weather's good. And Nashville just got approval to build this brand new, like, billion-dollar stadium. And the sticking point was you have to have a roof so you can potentially host a Super Bowl. Same thing in Chicago. I know they want a brand new stadium. They're going to have a roof on that. So unfortunately, I mean, this is such a great stadium and so unique, you can't just plop a roof on it. And I don't see this stadium ever getting torn down for the foreseeable future because it is such a unique, good home field advantage.
So are you telling the people of Seattle there'll never be a Super Bowl here until a new stadium is built? Is that what you're telling the fans?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, wouldn't it be more fun to kind of have the draft anyway? Like, the Super Bowl, for all its you know, shenanigans, it's just two teams, and it might not be the host city. So the draft,
it's just two
the
teams.
Draft is the entirety of the NFL. We saw a ton of Seahawks fans at the draft in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Didn't was it Smith and Jigba? One of the draft picks. Yeah, I think it was Jackson Smith and Jigba was down there in the crowd.
Yeah,
kind of
yep.
interacting with the Seahawks fans, which is pretty cool. So I think the draft would be a lot of fun. It would stink to not ever have a Super Bowl, but it just feels like. Look who they're rotating through.
No,
they've
gone
to Glendale a ton. Now they're Vegas is now in the mix, which
it's
an ideal site. So
I
bring the draft here soon.
But they have throughout, and you pointed out a few different areas. Even the year they had it in Dallas, there was an ice storm out there.
Mm-hmm.
That place shut down. I was out there. People weren't ready for it. They don't have to drive in the ice out in Dallas. So that was kind of a catastrophe out there. But New York was Arctic. At that time, it was so cold. So they've made exceptions. I understand Detroit is inside, but even then, if you're just talking about you want the people that are coming to the event to enjoy the surroundings and go to restaurants and walk around the city, Detroit's not that. It's freezing out there. It's not good weather out there. So,
well, and that's why I think they haven't been back. They're like, all right, here's your one.
All right,
they'll never go back.
Give Seattle our one.
Cities.
Give us our one.
We are going to hear from the guy in charge of that in Y-Man, so
right.
We can rip him for that then.
All right, well, you just alluded to it there. A big name in the NFL makes his return to Y-Man. That is coming your way next as we continue live from Edgar's Cantina at T-Mobile Park. It's Y-Man and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Why, man? Why?
Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
He's a habitual line stepper.
What were you thinking? What are you doing?
Why are you the way that you are?
It's the Why Man of the Week.
It is time for Why Man. We do it every week. It is presented by Mazda of Everett. Coming up at the top of the hour, Ryan Roland Smith will join us here at the set. We are live at Edgar's Cantina at T-Mobile Park. It is Wyman and Bob left in for Wyman. So if you guys are coming out to the game, come by, say hello. We'll be out here. Beautiful day for baseball. But let's get down to business. Entry number one comes courtesy of a man we were just talking about who could have some influence on getting the Super Bowl out here. And so far, he's not doing a great job of it. But Roger Goodell talking about flexing Thursday night football, in his opinion, will not affect player safety.
Flex has been part of our scheduling for quite a while. We expanded it to Thursday night. It will be used judiciously, if at all. It's a very limited time period, and it's also something that is what we would consider a higher bar. We expanded it to 28 days in the context of our fans and making sure that they have appropriate notice if that does happen. But we have data on the safety of the game. There's been no difference. In fact, it's slightly lower on Thursday nights. We don't see that. We haven't seen that in the data since we've been playing since 2006, I believe it is. So we don't think it's inconsistent at all with player safety.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't really believe that.
You think he's just spitting lies? You think he's there is no such data that shows that there's not a higher injury rate playing Thursday? You play on a Sunday, and then you got a short week, you play on a Thursday?
Yeah, you know why? There's less sample size on Thursday nights. They haven't been doing Thursday night football for as long. There are less games. But just the...
Did he say 06? Is that what he said there?
Yeah, I think so.
I didn't realize it was that long.
But just the whole nature of it. I mean, come on. We've talked about Thursday night games. We've seen the level of competition on Thursday nights. To say in the middle of a season, okay, yeah, all of a sudden you're going to play on a Thursday. You guys weren't prepared to do so.
But he's given a month.
A month, though. That's not a lot. And not for opponent-wise. That's not a lot to just for the sake of your body. So, you know, you have your bye week, which for the Seahawks is really early.
Mm-hmm.
Week five, then you're playing the rest of the season. If all of a sudden, and the Seahawks are not the best example this year because they already have two Thursday night games, now they might actually get flexed out of one because Thursday night football, he's talking about flexing week 13 through 17. So that Cowboys one could. It won't, though, because it's the Cowboys, so they're gonna be in there. But if you're getting through the grind of a season, then all of a sudden your schedule is thrown out of whack in a late game situation where it's probably going to be a game that's meaningful. That's why they're going to put that game in a Thursday night window. You want that on a 4-day gap there? Like, from the player perspective, I don't like it. And I really don't like it from the fan perspective.
I don't think
it's... Oh, wait, so you kind of chime in here.
Well, I don't think it's optimal.
Yeah.
But do I think it's a huge deal? No, I don't. Because you're getting a month's notice in that situation. As far as players, they don't like it even when they know the year before. They could give you the schedule a year in advance, and they don't like it. I mean, that's just the reality of it. You got a couple teams that'll have more than one Thursday night game. So it's... listen, nothing gets in the way of the money-making machine.
I know.
That's what it's all about. They've had some dreadful matchups on Thursday nights where it's, and I don't, to me, people will look at it and go, well, that's because they don't have enough time to rest. Well, no, very often it's because you got two garbage teams playing each other. And we've seen it a number of times where it's, the Texans and the Jags of a couple years ago or something like that. And you're looking at it going, ugh. And it's not that it's bad football because they didn't have the proper amount of rest. It's because it's bad. It's just a bad matchup. It's a bad pairing.
Well, 4 days also, I think. There's a little bit of that, too.
I think there is, but I think it's for me, I feel like the players overplayed just a bit. You know, I'm not saying that there's not merit to saying, hey, less time to recover. You're not getting the same level same level of play that you would with full rest. Obviously, that makes sense. But I don't know that it's as catastrophic as it's presented to be at times.
What about the fans, though? I feel bad for the fans here because you do plan trips out way in advance. Fans have planned trips out the second the schedule came out. I mean, the second I saw that Seahawks game in Tennessee on Christmas Eve, you know, I'm going to plan out that trip. So if that game would have been flexed all of a sudden, mm-hmm. a month notice in the middle of a school year, a work year, holiday travel,
that's
not a lot of time. A month is not a lot of time to all of a sudden, if you're a fan and you want to plan a road trip, you're left out to dry because you don't have a hotel booked.
Mm-hmm.
Plane fare is going to be incredibly expensive. So it is unfortunate from that perspective. Yeah, it's going to be TV first and foremost. That's the only consideration. That's why the NFL puts games on Thursdays and Fridays and Saturdays.
And sells
and
rights
Sundays
to streaming services.
And yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't like it. And it's another reason to just pile on Goodell. So I figured it'd be good to get him in Wyman.
Well, listen, you make 45, 50 million, whatever he's going to make with his new contract. You deserve it. You got to wear this. So yeah, to me, the more egregious part of it is the fans, because as you talked about, most people are making those arrangements really far in advance. It is a big trip for a lot of people that takes a lot of planning. And then, you know, you get a month's notice, but oh, wait, that game's not happening now.
Yeah.
Now it's on this day or so. Yeah. But you stated it correctly. They don't care about, they want a packed house and they want it to look good on TV, because the TV broadcast, the TV rights, and the TV viewership is the priority. That's the money-making machine. The other part of it, the attendance and those fans there, he can say what he wants. That's lip service. It's about what's making us the most money. Why are we doing this? Money.
And
that's why.
I think that was my point of issue there. That even brought out the fans, because Roger Goodell does not care about the fans when he's making that decision whether to flex games or not on Thursday night football.
All right, number two coming your way. Let's see. Mariners play the Mariners. Oh, yeah, that's
we,
right.
We played this the other day, but it's just good fun.
This was interesting. So the Mariners were asked who you wouldn't want, who on your team would you not want babysitting your children?
I don't think I would let Logan babysit my kid. I just don't think he would do a good job at babysitting. I think he would panic as soon as the baby cries.
Probably like Jared Kelnick.
Logan Gilbert would be one.
Probably JK. We'll go killing it.
Brash?
Probably Jared. Gotta be careful there.
Matt Brash, because he's still a kid.
Now, the Kelnick one, I just wish they would expand a bit, like, Kelnick, because do they think he's too intense? Like, he would get, if the baby's crying, he's going to get mad and leave the room and leave the baby to its own devices? Or what do they think is going to happen?
Frustrated. Yeah. Stop crying.
Yeah. he's going to start slamming toys around and get upset. I'm just curious why they picked now we heard the one player, I couldn't tell who it was, say they think Logan would panic when the baby
that
was crying.
Ty, right? I think it was Ty France.
Was it Ty?
Yeah.
Because Logan, he would be one of my last picks in this situation. He seems like a very conscientious, thoughtful, kind human being. That's the kind I'd want, or if I had an infant and I was, I trust that his demeanor, his personality, but they think he would panic. So
maybe he has, like you were saying the other time we played this, he has too many gadgets and too many things occupying his mind. When he goes through his pitching routine and all the after work, doesn't have time to babysit a child in the corner there.
I think you'd come home and he will have created new toys out of existing products within your house. I think you'd come home to a whole new...
But at what cost of the house? That's why.
He would come up with some device that's going to help your baby learn faster, walk faster or something. It's just, I don't know. I don't understand the Logan element of that. Kelnick, I guess I kind of get it. All right, coming up, can never get enough of this guy. Our buddy Ryan Roland Smith is going to join us here on set live at Edgar's Cantina. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.